Today's episode is all about development and babies. Which environment is best for them? Or when should you start tummy time? Is it okay if they skip crawling? And which toys and gadgets are recommended by occupational therapists? All this and more in today's episode. Welcome to Curious Neuron, a podcast about child development and education with information that is backed by science. I am your host, Cindy Hovington. I have a doctorate degree in neuroscience and postdoctoral training in education. My specialties are understanding how the brain develops and how play promotes learning. I love searching through science articles to see what I could apply with my own three kids, and I want to share this information with you. Follow Curious Neuron on Instagram to vote for the topics I'll cover and send in your questions for the experts. For more information, visit us at CuriousNeuron.com. Hi, everyone. Thank you for joining me on this 10th episode of our Curious Neuron podcast. And before we begin, I'd like to take a moment to thank those who have taken the time to email me to give me some feedback about the podcast. And if you'd like to give me your feedback or have a topic you'd like me to cover, please email me at info@curiousneuron.com, or you could come see me on Instagram at curious_neuron. And if you are enjoying this podcast, please take a moment to go on iTunes and rate it as well as leave a review. So let's move on to today's interview. And just to let you know, right after the interview, I'll talk a little bit more about brain development and what happens inside the baby's brain when we create a certain type of environment. I'll discuss something called synaptogenesis and synaptic pruning, which is creating new connections in the brain as well as eliminating some. I'd like to give you a little heads up before I play the interview. So I interviewed two people at the same time for this episode, and they both had their babies with them. So you know what? That's the reality sometimes of being a mom working from home. You know, sometimes we have to bring our babies with us wherever we go. So this is an example of, you know, having to work and bring your children with you. I hope you enjoy this interview. So my guests today are the sisters behind the On Track Baby website and Instagram account. When you arrive on their homepage of their website, there's the perfect phrase in bold: new moms stress over milestones. Because as parents, we tend to stress over their developmental milestones. These pediatric OTs want to help us make sure that our babies are on track. You can get a free new mom manual on their website. Their blog and their Instagram account are also filled with important information about development, such as why tummy time is important or why babies get startled. And if you want to see their fun, bubbly personalities, check them out on YouTube for their Mom Talk Mondays. My guests today are Carrie and Jenny. Hi, girls.
Hi, thank you so much, Cindy. We're excited to be here.
Thank you for joining me today. So I think it's a really important talk on development, because I think whenever I meet a new mom or a new parent, I think the first thing they talk about is, should she be walking? Should he be speaking yet? Is this normal? And that phrase comes up so often. Is this normal? So I think today we'll have to cover a lot of, you know, the myths or some tips as well when it comes to development, and talk about our own experiences as well. Because what's interesting, I think, with you guys is, as pediatric OTs and now having your own children, I'd love to know maybe a bit of your own experiences in terms of what you were telling parents. And then once you had children, were you able to apply everything, or were you also questioning, is this normal?
That's a great question. Actually, and the thing about it is, and I hope this does to everyone who hears this, we actually had several delays with our first babies. So it's important to know that, like, even when you work in pediatrics, until you really have your own child and see that lens of, you know, what is happening day in and day out with your baby's development, it's so easy to think that things are normal or to question your own instincts on things because of the status quo. There's a lot of messaging out there that's like, all babies develop at their own rate. And that is not necessarily a negative message, but it can be very deceiving to a first-time parent who wants their child to just, you know, not be pushed too hard, but also, you know, to meet their milestones. So the balance of, like, is this normal? Like you said, is great with our first babies. We did use some like jumpers and extra saucers, and we tried to limit the use with it. And we actually found my son had a gross motor delay from it, and that was just with very short usage from it. And he actually has some issues with pronation of his feet, which is where the arch is just not forming properly because they push up so hard on those toes before they are capable of standing in those positions that hold them there. So that being said, you know, even with the training that we get as OTs, having children is just, you know, tremendously life-changing and educating for a professional too.
For sure. And I think what you brought up, you know, is a great segue into what we should have in terms of toys and equipment for our babies. Because when we have our baby showers, we tend to place like every single item possible on our list, right? And every single toy that exists. And but in essence, what do we really need? What is essential for when we have a baby?
Most moms are going to be really surprised about this, but we almost say you really don't need anything in terms of, you know, like a toy or any type of container other than really a high chair, obviously a car and the daily care items, but really a blanket or a play gym, you know, somewhere where your baby's going to be on the floor, being able to have that free movement from the very beginning is what we have found now that really actually just promotes brain growth, you know, from the very moment they come out. We did this with our second babies. We eliminated everything out of our house, and we watched the transformation before our very eyes, and we know moms can do it. We know it's a hard message because, you know, society, just the materialism and thinking that you need so many things to help your baby develop, but really they just need free movement. And that's really what's, I guess, misunderstood the most.
I agree. And I think what could be hard, though, as a parent is if you have things that you need to get done around the house, and maybe we sort of hesitate in terms of that free movement, right? Because if you're vacuuming or moving around, you're afraid if your baby's crawling that they, you know, try to climb. But in the end, that free movement really gets them to explore and discover.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, and what we actually find that like the normal process that nature designed for the human body wouldn't have him involved really anything except, you know, if we're going to go back to the cave period, a floor, a ground, essentially. So we like to use that as a measure of, is this a necessity or is this for entertainment or convenience, which is a part of the modern woman's struggle, you know, like work at home moms, we get that, you know, stay at home moms, keeping up with the house. Like we have so many demands now that we find that most of these things that are invented for the early infant time period are the result of people needing to keep their baby in one place without regard to what keeping them in one place would be doing towards their brain development.
That's a great.
And it's kind of labeled as a safety thing, but an unmoving baby on a blanket on the floor is actually in the safest position. They can't technically move. Now, a mobile baby does pose a little bit more of, but what we find is that like the more you work with your child, you know, the sooner that they begin to understand the environment around them. So it really is kind of a give and take scenario where sometimes it's nap time that you get the most done. And then sometimes it's, you know, you're observing them to make sure that they are happy and, you know, exploring little toys within their reach and then getting something done when they are doing that type of discovery, as opposed to like being down there with them, which means nobody gets anything done.
Yeah. And that's the reality of being a new parent too, though.
A new first-time mom would be one thing that we do understand and did use too a little bit is like a Dock-a-Tot type lounger or a Snuggle Me Organic sensory lounger. For a very new baby, like say, you know, when you're running to the bathroom or you use the shower, and your baby is, you know, 1 week old, we are not, you know, we totally understand that. But, we just know that when we say, oh, sure, spend 5 minutes in this jumper, but only spend 10 minutes, you know, in a Mamaroo, it's just that because people don't really understand how much the brain is going at that rate in the first year, that it just becomes a convenient factor. They get overused, and then we see them down the road with a developmental delay at some point. Now, it doesn't mean every time any baby that's ever used a container needs therapy. No, obviously,
exactly.
Take into account, you know, lots of different factors. Mm-hmm. That is a common thing that we do see in a younger population on the other side when they come in for evaluations and things. They've just missed milestones, or they just seem a little bit behind. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that can be contributed to, well, how much time do they get on the floor versus, you know, sitting in something that was actually doing something for them, them not learning to do it themselves. So mm-hmm. that kind of makes sense.
And how early should a parent start tummy time with their baby?
We actually say from birth onward, reflexively, a baby can come out of the birth canal and be stomach down on a mother's stomach, and they'll use their stepping reflex, their palmar grasp, and their asymmetrical tonic neck reflex to move upward and actually self-latch. And there's lovely research now that is beginning to inform more of the Western practice of birthing about this process and how important it is neurologically to the foundation of your baby to come through the squeeze of the canal and be placed, you know, in that scenario of being able to crawl upwards, because you're just activating that whole brainstem. Mm-hmm. And actually, so many mothers struggle with latching in the first, you know, few weeks of breastfeeding. And a lot of those issues are related to the fact that we are skipping that process. It's called the breast crawl.
Yes.
If we skip that process and we kind of self-latch the baby, if the baby doesn't self-latch, we kind of force the positioning, then we actually are at risk to have some improper latching, which creates pain and issues and, you know, goes further on to complicate the whole process of transitioning into being a mother. Mm-hmm. So, it's an element that we just don't realize how important being belly down is for a baby, but literally can begin the minute you come out.
And I started tummy time when I got home from the hospital. Yeah. And I noticed that, you know, I think we might fear it because they're so tiny, they're so fragile that you don't want to put them down on their belly, but it's almost immediate where you put them down and they try to lift their necks.
Yeah.
And they're trying to look up, and even if they're tilted, they're trying to look up at you, and it's beautiful to see them already trying to develop those skills and those muscles, that muscle strength.
Yeah, really, it is. It's, I think when we give respect to the process, mm-hmm. instead of just kind of assume that our babies are like these empty dolls that take 6 to 9 months to become very human-like, we find an incredible relationship begins from the beginning because you're looking at your baby knowing that every second counts, instead of like, what am I going to do for 6 months until you sit up and play with toys? But it is a hard time period. I mean, it is. Tummy time is a struggle for new moms and seasoned moms, because the babies can quickly be tired of it. And so that's why we always preach it's about frequency, not duration. And unfortunately, so much of the messaging around tummy time is like, they just need 20 minutes a day. So set your timer and walk away. Yeah. And, you know, and then you get a screaming baby and your hormones are coursing and the cortisol is leaking. You're just like the worst thing ever. And you could just quit on that for 6 months.
What should a mom do if her baby is crying every time she places her baby on its tummy?
Yeah. So our method of baby development begins on the floor, and we like to just introduce baby to the floor. And that can be on their back, on their side, gently rolling in and out and off the tummy to the back, very close contact initially in those first few weeks, having very low expectations, mm-hmm. Just making it more about the relationship and the engagement of like, look what your body can do, baby. The eye contact, the talking, the exploring with tickling and rubbing, infant massage is a great mm-hmm. thing to do to get your baby ready for the floor. And then you can begin to roll them to their tummy, talk to them, be nearby, roll them out. We just always say follow your baby's behavior. They're learning every second of the way. And if you're leaving your baby to cry, then, you know, they're going to very quickly learn an association with tummy time, which is I don't have my mother's support. She makes me stay here. So that's the point. It's like, you, even if your baby is crying for half a second, take them out of it. Try again later.
Yeah. Okay. That's good to know. So not leave them there crying, but tell them it's okay. I got you. You know, I'm there for you, and we'll come back. We'll come back to this later.
And just whenever they seem content again, you know, there's no time limit on it. So just, you know, you watch your baby, observe them if you need to feed, or maybe you just need to talk for a minute. try again. You know, there's really, there's nothing around it other than just do it as much as you can in the beginning so that the relationship, like Jenny was saying, gets going and they become more tolerant and accepting of it from an early age.
I see. Okay. And I found what helped with my kids was placing something in front of them, like a high contrast card or book or a mirror.
Yes.
Because it gave them something to look at. Even if they're not seeing very well the first 3 months, there's still that black and white image for them to, you know, explore, I guess.
Absolutely. And that high contrast things are, would be something, I guess you could say, to put on a registry. That would be one item.
Oh, yeah. It's true.
That, you know, when people are always like, what can I buy you? What can I buy you? It's like, well, you know, high contrast things, and they have books and mirrors. Mirrors and things like that are excellent, you know.
These are the types of toys or items that they should have around them. And, you know, nothing with the bells and whistles. I always say stay away from anything that sings too much or makes too many noises or flashes lights. They don't really need that. They need to see you. They need to see images that are still.
So let's, I guess let's round about what I would go back to and say, because we kind of went many directions with that. I'd say for a new baby or a registry, get a blanket, some visual items that they can look at. And we always encourage the most natural items that you can find. So there's luckily an upsurge of like little teethers that are actually wood or 100% rubber. Things that are in our earth, coming from our earth anyway, and we've just kind of plasticized, if that is even a word, with primary colors and strobing lights, like you said. It's just so unnecessary and so overstimulating for a new brain. We need quiet, calm, you know, this is just what real life looks like to develop from the beginning. Yeah.
Do you have any of these items on your website?
We actually
not on the website. We have an Amazon store that we rounded up our favorite things.
Yes. Okay, good to know.
Down on Instagram, you can there's newborn, a link there.
Newborn category.
Perfect. So. Good. And I, you know, I love the fact that you said, you know, respect the process, because I think that's what we should keep in mind when it comes to their development, instead of worrying about every step, but just respect their process and the way that they're going to go about it. So at what point should a parent get worried, I guess, when it comes to developmental milestones?
Well, as therapists, we always say after a 2 month mark, you're beginning to look at a need for early intervention. So if you can look up, we recommend pathways.org is a phenomenal developmental milestone website that shows videos and has checklists and tips and activities. So we always send people there to go through kind of your baby's age versus what they're doing. And then if you kind of find something, and generally, not even generally, mothers are the best resource and source of information about their baby. They are intuitive. It's amazing how intuitive mothers are, even with no training or knowledge about infant development. They can come in and say, I noticed for about a month this was happening. My doctor said it wasn't any big deal, you know, but the mother always knows, and the mother is never wrong. It is kind of fascinating that once you get to a level of like it's significant that other people are recognizing it, and that tends to be about 2 months past the date. So an example of that would be, you know, we expect children to be sitting up between 6 to 7 months. And so if your baby gets to be 9 to 10 months, 9 to 10 months, you want to have a conversation with your pediatrician about getting an evaluation. And while that is scary, kind of like, oh no, now I have to face the reality that my baby's delayed. We also like to say that simply because you can get a lot of peace of mind. Like if you go to a therapist and they're like, well, yes, there's some weakness in their core. You can do X, Y, and Z. Your baby will, you know, get back on track. Then you've already taken out, you know, several more weeks of worrying on your own. So it's not always that babies instantly qualify for intervention at that 2 month mark, but it's a good time to start looking at it with some outside help.
I'm assuming rather than delaying it, and then there would be a worse consequence, right? Instead of
it gets bigger.
And in terms of developmental delays or just development in general, if somebody has a premature baby, what should they be following the developmental milestones the same way, or is it different for them?
Well, this is what's something that's really incredible about the human brain. It's just like it is amazingly resilient. So obviously there's an adjusted period for the baby that came out pre-due date. So technically, yes, they will always be older than their expected milestone simply because they're chronologically older than their arrival. I'm sorry, than what they would have
their expected time.
Yeah. So if you're 2 months early, you're always going to be, you're going to be a 2 month old, but you're not likely to be holding your head up. But we always, when you hit a due date with a baby that came early, you should immediately begin working on just the tummy time, the newborn position of being on the belly, and go from there. Because what happens is a lot of these preemies feel very fragile, even just like the term baby does. And they get held, they get put into infant swings, momaroos, and it always keeps them on their back. And that ultimately can slow down the preemie development, just like it would slow down a term baby development. So anything, the preemie needs to immediately get to bed. I mean, they can do, and they will do in the NICU, belly down positioning. But ultimately, once you are home with your preemie, definitely get to working on the floor position and the tummy time position, simply because they can catch up very quickly when given the right stimulus.
Okay. So in essence, it's really the same steps as what anybody else would would do coming home with a baby. Okay, got
it. Actually, if you, I will, I'll just add this too. Even with G-tubes, some of these babies do come home with some complicated wires, oxygen, the G-tube, like I said, those all can be done. You can still do tummy time with the wires and everything. So that's, and even trachs. So it's important to just, you know your baby, watch for their cues, follow their behavior. But a medically fragile baby will make great gains if placed on their belly as soon as possible out of the hospital. Yeah. And that could be the number one tip if anybody's listening and has a fragile baby. Definitely don't hesitate to do tummy time.
Okay. What's a G-tube?
When they are fed through their stomach. It's like a little closure that has to be opened and closed, but it's basically the intestine, the stomach being stapled to the wall of the belly. And so they have a little device that can, parents are afraid to put them on their belly because
I was just going
to
ask, it doesn't hurt the baby if it's in, if it's on their belly?
No, it actually, by the time they're, it's, I mean, it can actually be done outpatient in terms of a procedure. So it heals very quickly. It's kind of like how you would feel about your, if your ears are pierced, you know, the hole is just there and it's
okay. Yeah. Okay. Got it. And in terms of spending time with your baby, how important is skin to skin?
Oh, that's our favorite
century.
Well, and we feel like so much of this is even overlooked too. I mean, just even, I mean, I don't know what the birthing scenarios are like up there, but, you know, we really have to request it even down here. They've been trying to do a little bit more of it in the hospital setting, but it's not just, you know, widely known to put the baby right there and are so detrimental because you know, people just don't even understand, you know, how important skin to skin is just right after birth and the hormones related to it and the bonding that happens. So we, you know, we always try to encourage, you know, new moms or pregnant moms, you know, request skin to skin immediately and for as long as you need, or it's very timed, you know, in the hospitals down here, they'll have it very timed. So, you know, we know that can be a challenge for, you know, if that's where you end up having a baby, but just be aware when you get home to do it as much as you can, you know.
Well, so it's not just at the hospital, you can continue doing it once you get home.
Yes, especially if you had a rough start. It's important because a lot of moms feel some PTSD around the birth experience and worrying about if your infant is either going to survive or going to have long-term outcomes, and so they can feel very detached from their baby, especially in a hospital setting where the staff provides all the primary care and you're kind of an outsider in the looking in on your baby being cared for. So you're missing some of those early, like Carrie said, bonding experiences, but specifically skin to skin, the sense of smell is fully developed at birth. So they actually smell the scent of the mother, which they swallow amniotic fluid in utero, and they can actually taste and smell and have a sense of what their mother's scent is. And babies have, there's research that says they can recognize their mother's scent within an hour of birth.
Wow.
So obviously if you have clothes on or if you have perfume on your clothes, that's not going to cut it. It is literally the primal aspect of being skin to skin. There's thermoregulation. There was a great study that I wish more higher level NICUs would look at that in third world countries, they don't have sufficient isolates to warm babies post-birth, and for babies that were experiencing thermoregulation issues, just the ability to maintain the 98.6 temperature, they were just at their wit's end because these babies were dying left and right with insufficient equipment to warm them. And so as a last resort, they started just putting them on their mothers after birth, the preemies, the, you know, babies that were complicated. And they were surviving.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
The last line of the study, and I wish I could say it to you. I can look it up. The last line of the study says that this informs third world practice, that this is a viable option in terms of infant survival rates. But also that first world countries should start looking at why we are putting babies in machines when mothers have been proven. And the study was replicated. So it was first in South America and then replicated in Australia. Mm-hmm. But anyway, they found that mothers were superior to IVF in terms of thermoregulation of a newborn. So,
wow. You know, it boggles my mind because there is so much research on skin to skin and
there really is.
Here in Montreal, I think it's different depending on the hospital that you give birth at, but where I was, the second the baby comes out, they're on you. And they do all their testing on you, whatever they can do. Like, they don't remove the baby off of you. And then they wait for you to nurse. So they wait for the baby crawl, that first latching. And then they remove the baby off to weigh them, to do their tests, whatever they have to do.
So nice.
And it comes right back on you. It just boggles my mind because the research confirms that you should be doing that. And it's not being done in our systems, in all our systems. Like, why not? why?
We want to pull our hair out.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Wow.
Something so simple, too. It doesn't require, you know,
exactly.
anything to do. It doesn't require any installation of any kind of equipment or protocol. Just put them on the mother. So,
yeah.
Primitive.
You know, it's just almost too easy.
Yeah, I know. I really don't. I'll never understand that.
Yeah.
You know.
And so important.
Yeah. Okay, good to know. So at least now we know that we could at least come home and then put our babies on our skin and continue doing that to bond with them and to help with their own brain development.
Yes, absolutely. And even like we always say, even if you're kind of having a rough time with your baby, I mean, you know, babies change the whole in that first year, and especially as a first time mom, you know, when they get extra fussy, the teething, everything, we always say, why don't you just do some skin to skin? Hold that baby close, take your shirt off. You know, it doesn't matter that they're 9 months old. Like, it's still going to be beneficial.
Okay, good. That's really important. So what are some myths that you've heard around baby development? Sorry.
If any.
We would say, well, probably the number one thing, not number one, but very popular, is that you need to put your baby on some kind of routine or sleep schedule. Like, what are you going to do immediately?
Oh, yes. I've heard that. Yes.
You know, about sleep. So there's a lot of just general myths about sleep and infancy and how it actually develops. So we find that wreaks havoc really on moms, because we are all sleep exhausted. But
yes,
another one, just quickly before we dive into any of them, is the amount of things you would need to help your baby develop, which, you know, we don't really recommend anything other than the floor and a few, you know, simple items. Another one.
Swaddling. You don't need to swaddle your baby to sleep. I know you mentioned that in the beginning. Another big myth is they have to start with like oats or wheat, like the small
rice cereals
as the first solid. That's absolutely not true. There's a number of.
I mean, there's just a couple. Yeah, there's just yeah.
So there are a lot. Maybe that could be an episode on its own.
That might have to be a whole separate episode.
Of a myth, but just needs to be expressed, that your instincts are always correct.
Right.
Like the way you are designed as a mother, like physically, the hormone reactions that are happening when your baby cries, you just need to respond in the moment with how you feel.
Right.
Because the instinct side of things really got trashed probably in the 60s, 50s, as like the medical model became more superior than just like the woman to woman, like birth at home type mentality. So it kind of came up that like women didn't know their baby as well as like the medical world did. And that is still pervasive today. You know, you see women, mothers, I should say, you know, specifically mothers, blown off about their children. Like we said earlier, they're always intuitive about how their baby is developing. And that's just something that is a myth that a mother without training, you know, can actually have insight into her baby. Or, you know, you read a book that's like, your baby should be sleeping 45 minutes every single, you know, hour, or what have you. Your baby isn't, then you feel like something is wrong, instead of just listening to your own intuition and going, well, my baby wasn't sleepy. So
yeah,
they can be awake right now and it's not wrong per se.
So if you're being told by a parent or a grandparent that you're holding your newborn baby too much and they need to cry and learn to be independent, is this something that stems from that?
That's a myth.
Yeah.
Hold your baby too much, physically impossible.
Yeah. I hear that a lot. I heard that within my own family too.
Right. You know,
put the baby down. They're in your arms too much. But I mean,
that probably is the number one.
Yeah.
That's a good myth right there.
Yeah.
Because people don't understand that holding is not devoid of developmental benefit. They're close contact with you. I mean, humans are social creatures. We're also physical creatures. Like, we need touch aspect of being, you know, what does a bear hug do for you? It makes you feel great and really stimulate your dopamine and your oxytocin just from that contact, which is your love hormone and your feel good hormone. And like, those are the things that are stimulated by the skin to skin and the holding and the interactions. So when we cut that out, we're at risk for having low dopamine and low oxytocin, which makes the whole gig of motherhood a lot harder.
So just holding our baby helps us as well.
Yes,
absolutely.
Yes.
Okay, and now when we're talking about developmental milestones, some babies, you know, achieve them faster than others. I think some people that send in some questions wanted to know why. Why do some babies reach them quicker than others, or why are some slower? Is this in terms of brain development? Is this just in terms of their environment, their genes?
Well, sure. I mean, there's a new, I will start this with our favorite phrase, that is, the brain grows with use. So specifically, when we stimulate the brain by, you know, the belly down position on the floor, you're going to begin to hit milestones at the age appropriate rate, or even some babies a little sooner. And specifically is because there is this emerging field of epigenetics, where we know that your DNA combined with the environment is going to manifest who you are, you know? So we have this structural makeup, but we also have this environment that affects the structure that we have. So some babies are kind of, you know, get up and go from the beginning. And those are the ones that are going to be, you know, getting after it. And you'll see them hit the milestones a little sooner. But specifically, a baby that is beginning to show a delay, there's always a cause. Like, we don't ever attribute that to, like, just because. Like, there's in science, we have answers, and we know that the brain is going to push the body to develop because of survival. I mean, that's just, like, again, in our DNA, but it's the environment then that we begin to look at, like, are they in containers? Are they swaddled? Is the mother doing a lot of holding and engaging and interacting and stimulation from it? And generally, those are the root of the issue. A lot of times it's like, sometimes a mother's been told something like, leave your baby in the infant swing, or don't hold your baby so much, or they'll do things like, they'll be afraid of tummy time. And ultimately, and because we're not educated then enough about tummy time, is just something that people are told to do. They're not really educated about what it all influences. And so they think, my baby hates it, I'm not doing it, you know, I'm not gonna. Ultimately, they don't realize that their baby is 8-9 months old and, like, not crawling. So there's always a link to a delay.
That's something else that they should mention at the hospital when we're leaving with our baby for the first time. It's like, bye, take care, but start your tummy time when you get home.
Absolutely.
Just that one sentence that doesn't take any other extra resources.
Again, free.
Yeah, exactly. We always hear it in terms of nature versus nurture, but I like to say it's nature and nurture.
Yes, absolutely.
Right? So they have their genes, but if you don't provide that environment, you're not going to feed that brain and give it what it needs.
Well put, yes.
Okay. And are some milestones more critical than others?
Oh,
that was a question somebody asked. I thought it was a good question. Yeah.
And I think that one is coming from the fact that some babies skip crawling. And so they think.
Yes. And that came up as well. Yes.
And it is necessary. And no, that doesn't mean it's an insignificant milestone simply because a baby skipped it. And it doesn't mean your baby's smarter. In fact, it actually can have years of implication down the road. And so the hierarchy
If they skip crawling?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Wow. So the hierarchy, so movement is what initially builds the brain. And from brainstem, we have these reflexes that the baby doesn't have a lot of purposeful movement. So they can't look at a toy and think, I'm going to grab that. So they use these reflexive movements that are stimulated by the head position. So that might kind of start to sound like lingo. And what I want it to, what everybody to grasp is basically when you put your baby on their belly and their head begins to lift up, they influence their vision by looking down and looking up and looking down and looking up. So they develop up close vision and distance vision. And then they begin to look to the side, and then some more reflexes come into play. Some people recognize the fencer's pose, where one arm is bent and the other arm is straight. That one begins to teach the body that they can do separate things with each side. So the right side can be straight, the left side can be flexed. So that's what we eventually get bilateral coordination out of. And, you know, not to go further down that avenue, but basically when you skip crawling, you skip cross patterning, which is the right arm goes up with the left knee. And that is how the two sides of the brain talk to each other. And so when we miss that opportunity to really hone in on crossing the hemispheres, then ultimately the activities that come down the road, like handwriting, when you are crossing a page of your midline of your body. So if you think of your nose, your belly button, all the way down the middle, you have to cross from the left side of your brain to the right side of the brain on a piece of paper. But if you never crawled, that's going to be something you struggle with. And some other learning disabilities come up from not crawling. So
foundational.
When not to stress, if you are a mother listening and you have a child,
yeah, I was just going to say,
guess what? The answer is super simple. You have to go back and play crawling games on the floor with your child.
Okay.
You can rebuild, fill in the gaps of the foundation. And you actually see learning disabilities dissipate when you go back and you provide those early experiences that the brain needs. And that solves the problem.
And I've seen some babies crawl very differently. Even within my own three kids, they had their own little crawl, you know, when they were learning. Do these also have an impact, or is this just their own way of learning how to crawl?
Well, I mean, ultimately, you always want the hands and knees position, you know, a reciprocal, like the left arm, right knee going, because that is what the patterning is doing in the brain, and it's mapping out how to use them both effectively and smoothly. And baby.
And what if they're dragging themselves?
Yeah, if they, now army crawling is when they drag the legs, but use the arms going across, and that usually is a precursor to hands and knees, or it could be that they end up skipping even though they army crawl. Now, army crawling is great because it's an amazing upper body strength, and it's actually prepping the body to crawl. But what happens too is babies that just constantly crawl, army crawl, army crawl, they get older, and then they start figuring out how to pull up and get around. And so they're like, okay, well, I can just use my strong arms, and I start pulling up on this furniture, and that can be a way that they eventually skip it, you know? So again, we just say, go back, do crawling games on hands and knees, have, babies crawl over your legs, like put a toy on the other side of your leg, and have them crawl that way over pillows, like couch cushions, that way, even like older kids, like, you know, 5-year-olds, we go back, do obstacle courses on the floor, hands and knees. Yes, you would ultimately want them hands and knees crawling if you can.
I've also heard of some parents who said that you shouldn't place a baby in a position they're not doing yet. So if your baby isn't sitting yet and you're playing with them, you shouldn't be holding them up in that sitting, like forcibly, you know, you shouldn't force them into that sitting position. Is that true, or does that help them strengthen the muscles to learn how to sit?
Yeah, that can be confusing. So one of the things about, that's like such a fine line in development is that you want your baby to marinate in their milestones, you know, like kind of culture. And we do want our children to be early in how, you know, we want the best for our kids. So we're like, oh, you should be, you know, rolling. Now you should be sitting. Now you should be crawling. Now you should be standing. But the minute a baby achieves one, instead of thinking of maybe I need to stay here for a hot minute and let this baby really figure out what this milestone is doing for the body, we start working on the next one. And that's kind of detrimental because we don't want our baby to go too fast through each stage. So we like to think of it, if a baby's first year is kind of broken down into four developmental stages that correlate with school. So like kindergarten, middle school, high school, college, if you will. You can't really go to high school if you skipped middle school, and you can't go to middle school unless you skipped kindergarten. And I get it. There are some kids out there that are prodigies or what have you that information quickly, but those are we can't base the norms on that. So you have to mm-hmm. spend a certain amount of time in each developmental school, if you will. And that with mm-hmm. the baby that is immobile, but moving their arms and legs. And then the baby that is, mobile crawling, and then the baby that is standing, and then that's the baby walking. And so mm-hmm. each stage does different things to growing it. So back to the question, Carrie says, I'm meandering. You definitely can sit with your baby upright on their lap. That doesn't sound like the answer yes. I was about to give. But when we are holding our babies upright, we do give them some dynamic feedback from our own movement. So that's totally different than putting your baby in a container that sits them up for them, just hard mm-hmm. plastic on the side of their bodies that they'll crash sideways onto. When you're holding your baby and you know they're a lap sitter, then your hands are going to, you know, their rib cage falls over a little bit, you kind of adjust it back. And you can also play with your support, which ultimately does help strengthen the muscles. So it's kind of just understanding that if you have a baby that's close to sitting but not sitting, yeah, that's fine. Yeah, I mean, we're always going to be holding our babies and naturally yeah. put them on our laps. It's not detrimental. But I think what some moms, and we do get this one a lot, they say, how can I help my baby learn to sit up? And oddly enough, you have to just keep your baby on their tummy, because the pushing up position, the way that they begin to get into sitting is from their belly. Like they begin to push backwards, upwards, and then they get there on their own. So you don't necessarily have to teach them how to sit. Nature already did that. We just have to get their way.
That's a good point. It's true. They have to learn it on their own. I it's funny because I just went through that milestone. So I saw my son kind of, you know, start bending his leg a little bit when he was on his tummy, and then lift up a little higher, and then all of a sudden he was sitting up.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, you see them learn their body.
Number
learns.
Two and three, like we're like, you'll get there.
Yeah, yeah. I know. Number one, you panic. Number two, you panic a little less. Number three, like, yeah, whatever. You'll learn it.
That's the coolest thing, and I wish that we could express that more to first-time moms, because if you just knew your baby was going to be okay, if you didn't stress so much about what you should be doing with them and just spend the time bonding and responding. And
yes, I agree.
Loving
yes.
on them. Like you get to watch the magic happen because it's there. It's ingrained in our DNA to move. Humans want to move. It's how we survive. So, I mean, mm-hmm. you don't have to teach them how to move. They are designed mm-hmm. to make it there.
It's that links a lot to some of the questions I get most of the questions I get revolve around play. What do you do with a baby? How do you play with a baby? Which toys are the best? And it always comes down to just join them in their world.
Yes.
Just come down to the floor and watch them, talk to them, have a conversation, see what they want to explore, crawl with them.
Love that.
And that is how a baby plays. You don't need toys. Just let them explore. And that's it. That's how they'll learn and develop. Is there such a thing as stimulating your baby too much when it comes to their milestones? I guess continuing a bit on that path that you were mentioning now.
You know, honestly, not if you're watching your baby's behavior. I mean, obviously stress is, I think that's that is a point that needs to be made, I think, is that babies are so intelligent, and like we kind of, again, treat them like they're just these cute little playthings that aren't able to do much. And so we must do things with them and for them. And the thing about it is that like, there's so many great reads. Like I've just started a book by Dr. Chamberlain about babies from birth, like how consciously aware babies are. And that's like what we miss out on when we stress about like, I got to teach you how to do this, and I've got to get all these amazing toys for you to learn. if we, like you said, just join them and observe them, you're going to see the spark in their eyes, and you're going to, it's like when you buy a new toy. When you buy a toy, they may play with the box. You know, they don't know what a toy is. Like, it just, it's not a concept that they grasp. It's something adults have projected onto children. So in terms of overstimulating, if you're just being thoughtful and tuning into your child, and stimulation is literally every day, every minute.
Which is what they need.
Absolutely. Well, one of the other questions we do face with that stimulation side is, again, the screen time on babies.
I was just going to mention that. That's the only overstimulation. Exactly.
And,
yes.
We, you know, we've had to draw the hard line for people we know, but we say, you know, zero. So,
yes.
And we stand by it. And we, you know, we tell moms to put the umbrella up if they have an older child, you know, or something, if their baby's playing on the floor in the living room, which ours had to do. We put an umbrella up with a few things down there if they're playing. But, you know, that is, and I think that's so sad because that really is so kind of misunderstood, and it is so overstimulating for babies.
From what I hear from parents, it might be difficult, especially if you have, if this is your second child and your first one is older and they want to watch some television. And however, I always use my own example where it's possible. I had three kids and there was no TV before the age of two. And now I have my third child, and TV is not on in the house unless my baby is sleeping. So it's possible. It's definitely harder, but it's possible. Yeah. And it's important for their brain because that is the only overstimulation that you can have.
Well, and I'm sure you'll agree with me too, that like when they don't have TV, they creatively use what they have.
Yes. Yeah. We allow them to be bored, which is important, especially when they're older, 18 months or 2 years of age. They need to be bored. That's part of their development, because then they'll have to, you know, be creative. What should I do with what's in my environment?
Absolutely.
So I received a question that asked how to help an 11-month-old that doesn't pull to stand yet. But maybe, because I received a few specific questions, but maybe we could refer back to that website that you mentioned. Would they have some exercises or some activities you can do?
Yes, with regards to this? Pathways is a great one, especially when you get very specific about you know, what a certain age child isn't doing. Pathways is the place to go to. So pathways.org is going to have tons of resources on.
Perfect. Thank you. And when it comes to a baby moving around, can weight have an impact on that if we have a baby that's one of those really cuddly, cuddly babies?
So that is something that is interesting about the human baby, is that they are by design, obviously, able to gain a lot of weight quickly as survival. But if they are not placed in the belly down position relatively soon following birth, they can become overweight quite quickly. And then they actually can have a hard time meeting those physical milestones because they can't lift themselves. I mean, it's just really not rocket science. It's like, you know, it's harder to do when you're heavier. And then we also have kind of a culture of like, oh, you know, the bigger the baby, the better you are as a parent. Like you've somehow fed them like more
well fed
is kind of like that idea. But you know, you can almost spot the bigger babies that aren't doing enough of the physical movement, which, like we said, movement is tied to how the brain grows past the reflective brainstem and up into your higher levels of cognitive development. It's all attached from the beginning. And so you don't really want a massive baby. And you want kind of like a, you know, they're all a little roly-poly and wrinkly, but ultimately when they get to doing the belly down position, they develop the appropriate amount of weight.
And what can a parent do though, if let's say they have a, I don't know, 7 or 8 month old baby and they're a little bit on the...
Yeah, the chunky side.
Cuter, chunky side, yeah. So how can a parent help that baby?
Play. So get down on the floor with them. Again, get them. Now, usually if they're already crawling at that rate, crawling is going to be the best thing for them, and that's where they're at. So just play with them. But a lot of times the bigger baby doesn't want to crawl very much because it can be tiring. So it is one of those things where you have to make the games, you know, set the toys far away, crawl with them for a little while, kind of get them involved and just make it a daily habit for sure to get active with your baby in that aspect.
And if a parent has a baby who has Down syndrome, I received one or two questions just asking in terms of developmental milestones. Are they meeting milestones at the same time as any other baby? Is it, again, going maybe back to that website, is there, can parents maybe use that to help guide them, even if a child has Down syndrome?
I can probably shed some light on genetic conditions in babies. A lot of times that they will affect how strong a baby is in an area called muscle tone. And so these, specifically a little Down's baby is going to have some low tone, which makes it harder to use your muscles. It's more work for them. So they tend to be resistant of any type of physical activity. And as a parent, not sure, you know, most of us don't think, I got to get my baby moving. You know, you're more in the I'm going to cuddle you, feed you, kiss you phase. And as it should be, it is the how it should be. But ultimately, yes, some genetic conditions can affect how strong a baby is. And so it all goes back to just, once again, as much as you can get them on their belly, or if they're past the crawling phase, go back and crawl with them, because those two positions are so strengthening to the whole body. So definitely something, if you do have a baby that has a genetic diagnosis, to feel relief that it's as simple as using those two positions, well, positions and movements, as much as you can during the day until you see the strength starting to show up.
Okay, perfect. And I guess to end off, I'd love to know, maybe this will help summarize our conversation, but what are your go-to tips when it comes to being a new parent? Maybe 3 to 5 tips.
Well, Carrie and I kind of reverse engineered this process because we have a therapy clinic. Yeah, I know, this is kind of crazy. You know, we were peds OTs, and then we opened a, you know, we do physical speech and occupational therapy at our clinic in early intervention. So we were seeing children and getting, you know, the professional side of development down. And then we had our own children, and like Carrie and I say, it's like a punch to the face. It's just that. Like so different. We learned so much from our first babies, and we learned so much more from our second babies. And we both laugh because we have about 8 books stacked by our bedsides that, you know, we get maybe a paragraph a night into before we just start drooling. We're always all learning. But ultimately what we did was we created the most simplistic way to help newborns develop through the NOEL method, which is an acronym that helps parents do these 4 things with their newborn from the very beginning. And it will, I mean, guaranteed, quote unquote, that they meet their milestones. So it's a very simple course that we created, and that's what we recommend people to take if they are very unsure about what to do with their newborn. Okay, tips for new parents. Make sure that you take your baby outside. There is really no reason to wait other than weather. Daily stroller daily walk stroller, or strap them into the, you know, all the amazing carriers they have now. Nature stimulates all the senses. So definitely feel free to take your baby out. That's a great mental break for a mother.
Always follow your instinct, your motherly instinct, whatever you feel in your gut. Doesn't matter what your mother-in-law said, or
your doctor,
or somebody who's been down the road. They don't know you and your baby like you and your baby know each other. So always follow that. Less is best, obviously.
We say less is best. You know, use your natural environment and what you have. It's more stimulating for a baby's brain than any, you know, crazy light up toy you're going to get them. Keep them on their belly, letting them have natural movement as much as you possibly can.
With you down there with them.
As much as they want to be held, always follow their behavior. They're humans too.
I think that's perfect to end it off. And again, just your website is ontrackbaby.com. And I guess for that NOEL, the program you mentioned, we can find that on your website?
Yes. On our IG, on Instagram, on OnTrackBaby, we have all the updates there, and we open the course 4 times a year. So we'll relaunch it this spring. So there's a wait list if people are interested, and they can just sign up on the email. But that is on, we do most of our everything on our Instagram right now. So you find the most.
So that's the best place to find you.
Okay, yes. I'd start there.
Okay, good. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me. It was really fun. I learned a lot from you guys, and I hope we can chat again soon.
Yes, thank you, Cindy.
So Jenny, Carrie, and I spoke a lot about environment, and I want to continue that conversation, but bring in a bit of the neuroscience or the brain science behind why it's important. So what happens is, in utero and after a baby is born, their brain is going through something called synaptogenesis. And this is when the connections of their brain, so the synapses or the neurons, are increasing enormously. So synaptogenesis, or the creation of brain cells, is followed by the elimination of brain cells, and that's called synaptic pruning. Which connections grow and survive and which fade away and die is determined partly by the genes that a baby inherits from its parents, and partly by the baby's early experiences. And this is why I think it's important for us to understand why, even if your baby is 2 days old, why their environment makes a big difference. Now, this doesn't necessarily mean that you should be exposing a baby to as many learning possibilities at every second of their day. It basically comes down to what we were talking about during the interview, and really giving a baby that freedom to explore their environment and giving them these opportunities to use their senses, because that's what's going to develop first. So we spoke a little bit about the contrast cards. So if you have a newborn baby and they are doing tummy time, you can place these high contrast cards, or there are some books on Amazon as well. And I'll post a link to some toys and these high contrast books as well on my website. Just search episode 10 on curiousneuron.com and you'll find the links. And something as simple as just massaging your baby or speaking to your baby is helping their brain develop, because they are developing their sense of touch and their sense of sight and their sense of hearing. So this is really the type of play that we should be doing with a newborn. Now, the reason we know that the environment is just so important dates back to some of the rat studies that they did in 1987, where they saw that the environment that a baby rat was in really helped their brain develop. There was a really interesting study by Grossman and colleagues in 2002 that created an environment for rats that had some wheels to spin, some ladders to climb on, and other rats that they can play with, compared to those rats that were described as being the deprived rats and not having these opportunities. So these rats that had all these opportunities had a 25% increase in brain connections. So the researchers interpreted this by saying that we learned just how important the environment is in terms of shaping a baby's brain. This doesn't necessarily mean that they should have wheels to spin or ladders to climb on as babies, but it's speaking to the fact that it really is important for us to create an environment rich for them in terms of learning. So everything basically that Carrie and Jenny mentioned. I hope this helps in the understanding of why the environment is so important. If you follow Curious Neuron on Instagram, you'll see that I talk a lot about environment. I really think it's important for parents to understand just how much of an impact the environment could have. So even if your baby is just a few days old or a few weeks old, speaking to your baby makes a big difference, because they might not understand what you're saying, but their brain is listening and their brain is making connections to sounds that you make, to certain social cues, such as looking at you in the eyes. And these are helping the brain develop. Reading to a baby as of, you know, the first week you come home with them gives you something to do with them. Tummy time, again, as of the week you come home with them, gives them that chance to develop those skills that they need. Being a new parent could be really stressful. And I've been a new parent in quotes 3 times. And I say new parent in quotes because it doesn't matter if you have 1 or you have 5. Each child is different. You kind of have to relearn everything every time you have a child. And something else I think that I wish I would have had as advice earlier is we need to let moments last. So if you're changing your child's diaper, it's not just about changing their diaper. It's really about taking time to see them, look at them eye to eye, speak with them, touch them and give them little massages and make sounds with them and laugh with them so that they see different emotions and different social cues in your face. Even something as simple as giving them a bath. When they're so small, again, it's that touch that's helping them develop. And as they get older and they start sitting down and they're sitting in their bath, running the water very slowly and giving them a cup becomes a huge learning experience for them. The water filling up the cup and then realizing that they could fill it up and pour it is learning. And all these tiny little moments that we just kind of rush through because, you know, you need to give them their bath and then you need to, you know, put on their diaper and put on their pajama. These are all moments that if we just learn from our babies in terms of taking things slowly and letting time pass slower, we get to learn from them and they are learning so much from these moments. So I think that would be my greatest advice in terms of development, because those moments are learning moments and that leads to brain connections. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Please follow us on Instagram so that you could vote for the next topic. We started giving out some webinars. So if you join our mailing list by visiting curiousneuron.com, you'll get notified for upcoming webinars. In our upcoming webinars at the end of April, we'll discuss how to stimulate a baby, and in another webinar, we'll talk about the science behind tantrums. Thanks for joining us. Until next time, stay curious.